I picked up a little soundbite from a film, True Detective. You might have seen it, Matthew McConaughey. And the other one, I forgot his name. But anyhow, I thought this was pretty amusing, so I cut the clip out of the film to run it for you. And I forgot to tell you, this was these two detectives had gone to this tent revival meeting. They're looking for a guy, but the conversation between the two detectives is very interesting. One is agnostic, maybe atheist, but pretty logically speaking. The other one's sort of nominal Christian, but he's a rounder, he's a whoremonger, he's a drunk. So let's listen to this interplay between these two detectives as they're standing at the back of this crowd out of nowhere's land in a revival tent.
Where is Chief? Parish FD said the church burned down 4 months earlier. No prince put out an APB on Friends of Christ. A week later, they were in Franklin. Revival ministry, old time religion. You can imagine what Mr. Charisma thought of that.
Who do you think the average IQ of this group is, huh?
And you see Texas up there on your high horse. What do you know about these people?
Just observation and deduction. See a propensity for obesity, poverty, the yen for fairy tales. Folks putting what few bucks they do have in the little wicker baskets being passed around. I think it's safe to say that nobody here is going to be splitting the atom, Marty.
You see that? Your fucking attitude. Not everybody wants to sit alone in an empty room beating off the murder manuals. Some folks enjoy community, the common good.
Yeah, but the common good's got to make out of fairy tales, and it's not good for anybody.
Your sorrows bring you to this place. They divide you from what your heart knows. And there are a lot of good hearts out there. I'm looking out there. I'm seeing a lot of good hearts out there. I see a lot of good out there.
I mean, can you imagine if people didn't believe what things they get up to? Exact same thing they do now. Just out in the open. Bullshit. It'd be a fucking freak show of murder and debauchery, and you know it. If the only thing keeping a person decent is the expectation of divine reward, then brother, that person is a piece of shit. And I'd like to get as many of them out in the open as possible.
I guess your judgment is infallible, piece of shit wise. You think that notebook is a stone tablet?
What to say about life? You gotta get together. Tell yourself stories that violate every law of the universe. Just get through the goddamn day. What's that say about your reality, Marty?
When you get to talking like this, I'm panicked.
You think it's all a scam, huh?
Mm.
All them folks?
Mm-hmm.
They just wrong?
Oh, yeah. Been that way since one monkey looked at the sun and told the other monkey, he said, for you to give me your fucking share. People. So goddamn frail, they'd rather put a coin in a wishing well than buy dinner.
Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ, your arms are open and closed. The echoes of my life can never continue to see the truth about you. You move a feather in the ash, you touch the leaf with its flame.
Transference of fear and self-loathing to an authoritarian vessel. It's catharsis. He absorbs their dread with his narrative. Because of this, he's effective in proportion to the amount of certainty he can project. Certain linguistic anthropologists think that religion is a language virus that it rewrites pathways in the brain, dulls critical thinking.
Well, I don't use $10 words as much as you, but for a guy who's
sees no point in existence, you sure fret about it an awful lot. And you still sound panicked. At least I'm not racing to a red light.
Yeah, man, at least I'm not racing to the red light. Ha! I love that. I couldn't have said it any better. In fact, I could never have said it as well as they did. I'll tell you, that was great. That should make sure that all my Christian friends have gone down the road. But that's all right if they want to join up with the club and listen to it. Well, that's all right. No problem, no problem. We all have our opinions. Just like we all have what? All together now. Well, yesterday we took a tour of all the shit in New York and where it went. Where it ended up. So just think about it. All that Negro shit from New York City, and boy, that's a lot because they're so full of shit, ends up in your strawberries. Next time you put cream on your strawberries, think about that. An integral part of your strawberry is shit from New York. Negro shit. Oh, God. If I haven't offended you yet this morning, I'll try harder as the show goes on. White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance. P.O. Box 401. I almost said 65, which I had for, 30 years? 401, right here in Warsaw, Indiana, where we got churches up the gazoo. Yeah, if we had affordable housing for as many churches as we've got around here, the poor people wouldn't have a big problem. Yeah, that's where you send your donation. Also, make sure you always put your email address in the envelope or under the flap or someplace or on your check or whatever. Because if you don't, I have no way of identifying you. Because I don't keep names around. And you should be happy about that. Yeah. Well, as soon as I get this artwork done on the non-equal sign, which should be done today, I'm going to ship it off to the printer. I've already paid them for $500. And then when you send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, I'll send you some. If you want to send a donation, okay. But if you're a regular member of the club, you don't have to. I'll send you some free. But it's going to be a little while till we get them. So anyhow, that's the story on that. And then I think we'll go to a bumper sticker. Do you have the testonies to put a non-equal bumper sticker on? Don't worry about it. These people don't even know what it means. I'm telling you. You got to tell them so plainly that it's unbelievable that a cow would understand for them to understand anything. I walk into a place with that non-equal sign on and people just sort of, they look, but they don't know what the hell's going on. Now, I would not have a problem understanding what non-equal means. At least I'd know it meant not equal. Unbelievable. And I don't know whether you guys got it. I send it out on the this recruiting video for the Chinese Navy yesterday. I tried to send it out, but I'm not sure whether it went out. But if you haven't seen it, you got to see it compared to our mishmash of multiracial forces. They are definitely a racist state, and you got to give them credit for that, the Chinese. They're really getting it together over there. You look at their guys marching down the street, you don't see one. I didn't see one different color than yeller in there. No, didn't do that. I see they're still going on and on and on about Julian Bond. God, he's been around for a long time. And they called him a pragmatic gentleman. What the hell does that mean? And they said he created the Southern Poverty Law Center. I don't think so. That was Morris Deese and another lawyer that did that. They started out defending the Klan. And Julian Bond didn't come on until later, as far as I know. But
Well, there's one down from the SPLC. Let's see who goes next. Let's have a death pool on SPLC. How about that? Now, Morris Deese has led a pretty wild life, done a lot of risky sexual activity and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know about his hair-lip friend there. What the hell is his name? Anyhow, and you got Richard Cohen, too. So I guess we... you guys want to get in on a death pool on the SPLC? We might be able to... Somebody might be able to make some money there. So anyhow, we can stand by and watch. I don't want anybody playing dirty and trying to get somebody to go before their time, man. That's not fair. Assassination is not fair in the death pool. Remember that. Well, here's a little diggy from the Jewish news. When I was in the fifth grade, my great aunt took me to an Indian jewelry store in Chicago's West Rogers Park neighborhood and bought me a necklace with a Jewish star pendant. It had only been 3 years since we immigrated from what's now the former Soviet Union, where religious expression was often persecuted, usually because you were a Jew. Nobody there would have worn such a necklace. And even in relatively Jewish part of Chicago, where we were living in the 1990s, such expressions were rare. People may have owned jewelry with Stars of David, but they kept the symbols discreetly locked away. Yeah. Not me. I wore my new necklace over my shirt every day with my parents' approval, but at that point, even though I knew it was a Jewish star, I didn't really understand what it meant. I treated my new accessory more as a fashion statement than a symbol of my identity. I didn't have many Jewish friends and still didn't understand where Judaism fit into my Soviet heritage. My elementary school friends just thought I was Russian. Well, one thing you got to know about the Star of David, there is no Star David that I've been able to trace, even in the Bible. I picked up a book and put it back down at a used bookstore once, which I kicked myself for not doing, because I went back to buy the book the same day and it was gone, and it had a picture of the Star of David. It said it's the devil's footprint. Well, I think that's probably more true than anything else. The devil's footprint. Actually, the Star of David, no matter where it came from, was used by the Christian church to separate and identify the Jews the Jews from Christians. And so in France and Germany and those places, the Jews wore the Star of David, whether they liked it or not. And it came back in World War II, too. So I wish every Jew would be like this girl and wear a Star of David. Every person that thinks they know anything about Christianity wears a cross. Well, I think it would be more enlightening for the people around them if all the Jews in the United States were to wear a star. And that way we'd know who they are and where they're coming from. Sounds like a good idea to me. So I agree with this girl. Well, let's tune into that old populace. Jimmy Hightower, see what he's got to say today about one of the candidates, which would fit them all, because they're all this way. Yeah.
If you think that none of today's presidential candidates care about people like you, check out Republican Scott Walker. The Wisconsin governor not only cares, he wants to sit down with you, get your ideas, and stay in close touch. No matter who you are, Scotty wants you to join his team so his presidency can be your presidency. Not a Republican? No problemo, amigo. Walker doesn't check your papers. Well, except for that $1 million check you have to write to his super PAC. That's the ticket price for entering Walker's inner circle, where you can discuss your policy concerns and seek personal favors straight from your lips to the candidate's ear. Even if you're a common working stiff, just give $1 million and you're in. Is this a great country or what? Maybe you're wondering what specifically your money buys. Well, Scott's Super PAC even prints out a handy purchasing slip showing that you'll be, quote, an executive board member of the Walkerites campaign. Thus, you'll have two private dinners with the man, a Walker staffer dedicated to your needs, special briefings and weekly emails, bi-monthly conference calls, bi-annual retreats, and best of all, quote, an exclusive executive board pin. Golly, I haven't been this excited or felt so included since the 1950s when I became a member of the Mickey Mouse Club and got my own set of mouse ears. This is Jim Hightower saying, when the Supreme Court descended into the Alice in Wonderland fantasy that corporations are people and money is speech, it was inevitable that American politics would devolve to a frivolous game that shuts out the workaday majority and enthrones a Koch brothers plutocracy sustained by secret money super PACs and whorish candidates like Walker. To help end this corrupt mockery of our electoral democracy, go to democracyisforpeople.org.
Well, thank you, Jimmy the Populist. You do a good job. I like your stuff. So anyhow, but I will say this. It never makes any difference. It goes on and on and on and on, either till things collapse or the people grab their forks and scythes and torches and head for the barricades. Usually, violence or implied violence gets us into this shape, and implied or real violence gets us out, and then the cycle starts all over again. But without violence, sorry Mr. FBI, without broad-based violence against the system, nothing ever changes because it's too set in cement. The ruling class have us by the balls, and of course I'm not referring to the women, but unless you're talking about Hillary, but anyhow, that's the way it goes, and there's just no way out of it except broad resistance and incorporating all kinds of people. Yeah, left, right, center of the road, everybody. You know, it takes a civil war to make a village. You're going to get all, from now on to the election, you're going to get this stuff in the mail over and over again that you can be on the inner circle of the board of trustees of the treasury of the Republican Party, and you'll get some too from the Democrats, but the Republicans are the ones who really come on strong. And you know, it's amazing the number of senior citizens that fall for this shit. Send in their $50 or $100 and they get a little paste on badge they can wear around a church. Yeah, I'm a good Christian, man. I support the ruling class. The only problem is with Hightower, I guess he don't understand, because he have this eternal faith in the human soul that democracy never worked for long. It could probably work in small tribal situation with the right kind of leadership, and then it's not really democracy at all. You got a leader of the tribe, and if you get out of line, it kicks your ass. But it all gets back to the ruling class. And they've got 24 hours a day to sit there and figure out, with all their lawyers and all those people, to figure out how to screw you. You don't have a chance. The common people never did have a chance. Like I say, the only time they ever had a chance is when they overrun the castle and cut the throats. But anybody who depends on developing democracy, and everybody seems to forget that the initial democracy in Greece failed. It didn't last very long. They keep acting like it was a success. Well, it just doesn't succeed because people aren't responsible. People aren't responsible for their duty to the group. I mean, you know, there's no way you're going to change that. You've got a large percentage of the population that don't give a shit about anything. They're not going to do anything about anything. They're just going to basically be parasites or drones. And that's just the way it is, boys and girls. Every time I talk like that, I get excited and pick up my main book here that I keep very close. The Might is Right book, The Survival of the Fittest. And I go back to that. I'll read a little bit of it to you today on Tuesday. I'm going to pick up where I left off last, and I don't know when that was. If we would retain and defend our inherited manhood, we must not permit ourselves to be forever locked to repose with the sweet lullabies of Eastern idealisms. That's mostly the Abrahamic religions and so forth. Too long we have been hypnotized by the occult charm of Hebrew utopianism, and part of that utopianism is the yearning for democracy. That's my words. If we continue to obey the insidious spell that has been laid upon us, we will wake up some dread morning with the gates of hell upon earth, yawning wide open to close again upon us forever. The idea of hell is, in some respects, a truthful conception, suggestive of actual fact. If we terrestrialize the location, there is nothing inharmonious about it. Many a race, many a tribe, and many an empire, mighty empire, has gone down into the grimly realistic shoal. It is not right and just that the vile, the base, the degenerate, that is to say, the slave nations of the earth, should be punished pitilessly for their creeping cowardice. It is not right that they should be, as it were, fried and toasted, should swim in pools of boiling blood or dance sweltering satanic glees with blistered feet and strained eyeballs on red-hot Sahara of grave and sand. In actual operation, nature is cruel and merciless to men. As to all other things, all other beings, let a tribe of human animals live a rational life, nature will smile upon them and their posterity. But let them attempt to organize an unnatural mode of existence, an equality Elysium, and they will be punished even to the point of extermination. All ethics, politics, and philosophies are pure assumptions, built upon assumptions. They rest on no sure basis. They are but shadowy castles in the air erected by daydreamers or by rogues upon nursery fables. It is time that we firmly planted upon an enduring foundation. This can never be accomplished until the racial mind has first been thoroughly cleansed and drastically disinfected of its depraved, alien, and demoralizing concepts of right and wrong. In no human brain can sufficient space be found for the relentless logic of hard fact until all pre-existent delusions have been finally annihilated. Half the measures are of no avail. We must go down to the very roots and tear them out, even to the last fiber. We must do like nature, be hard, cruel, and relentless. And, of course, this is what I've said all along. If you don't go to the basis, you don't go to the foundations, the rotten foundations, and take it all down and start all over again. This reminds me of Parkinson's Law. There's a book by that title, in which has to do with economics. It says you'll have a plant, and then people will say they need help. They're working too hard. They need help, so they'll hire more people. And then those people say they're working too hard, and they'll hire more people. So finally, it gets so bad that they tear the whole building down, plow up the ground, and start all over again. And we need to start all over again, men. Too long the dead hand has permitted to sterilize living thought. Too long right and wrong, good and evil, have been inverted by false prophets. In the days that are at hand, neither creed nor code must be accepted upon authority, human, superman, or divine. Morality and conventionalism are for subordinates. Religions and constitutions are all arbitrary principles. Even mortal theorem must be deliberately put to the question. No moral dogma must be taken for granted. No standard of measurement defied. There is nothing inherently sacred about moral codes, like the wooden idols of long ago. They are all work of human hands, and what man has made man can destroy. He who is slow to believe anything and everything is of great understanding, for belief is one false principle, is the beginning of all unwisdom. The chief duty of every new age is to appraise new men to determine its liberties, to lead it towards material success, to rend, as it were, the rusty padlocks and chains of dead custom that always prevent healthy expansion. Theories and ideals and constitutions that may have meant life and hope and freedom for our ancestors may now mean destruction, slavery, dishonor to us. As environments change, no human ideal standeth sure. Wherever therefore a lie has been built upon itself a throne, let it be assailed without pity, without regret, for under the domination of a falsehood, no nation can permanently prosper. Let established sophism be dethroned, rooted out, burnt, destroyed, for they are a standing menace to all true nobility of thought and action. Whatever alleged truth is proven by results to be but empty fiction, let it be unceremoniously flung into outer darkness among the dead gods, dead empires, dead philosophies, and other useless lumber and wreckage. The most dangerous of all enthroned lies is the holy, the sanctified, the privileged lie, the lie that everybody believes to be model truth. It is a fruitful mother of all the other popular errors and delusions. It is hydra-headed. It has a thousand roots. It is a social cancer. The lie that is known to be a lie is half eradicated, but the lie that even intelligent persons regard as sacred fact, the lie that has been inculcated around the mother's knee, is more dangerous to contend against than a creeping pestilence. Popular lies have been the most potent enemies of personal liberty. There's only one way to deal with them. You cut them off to the very core, just as cancers are. Exterminate them, root and branch, or they will surely eat us all up. We must annihilate them, or they will us. Half and half remedies are of no avail. However, when a lie has gone too far, when it has taken up its abode in the very tissues and bones and brains of a people, then all remedies are useless. Sounds like today. Even the lancet is of no avail. Repentance of past misdeeds cannot save decadence from extermination. The fatal bolt is shot, and into the fiery furnace of wholesome slavery and wholesale slavery and oblivion they must go, to be there righteously consumed. From their ashes something new, something nobler may possibly evolve, but even that is a merest optimistic supposition. In nature, the wages of sin is always death. Nature does not love the wrongdoer, but endeavors in every possible way to destroy him. I've been watching once in a while this program, I think it's on the History Channel, about these guys they put out, way the hell out in the woods. And they're out there with just bare necessities, and they have to live out there and live off the land for some time. They've got a $500,000 prize for that. But I'm telling you, that's the way to find out about people. Her curse is on the brow of the meek and lowly. Her blessings is on the very heart's blood of the strong and brave. Only Jews and Christ and other degenerates think that rejuvenation can ever come through law and prayer. All the tears of all the martyrs might just as well have never been shed. That's what bothers me when these idiots go out and volunteer for the military. Now, I see today in the news they're having an argument about whether to let these dykes on trikes in as Rangers and the heavy duty part of the military. Well, I put out a Twitter thing that said, I wish they would draft all the dykes on trikes and all the non-whites and make it a law that strong white men cannot join the military, because to join this military is to join death. It's a death cult. And they fill you so full of bullshit that you don't know what's going on. Phony patriotism. You're fighting for your country. You served your country. I was in the army. I might have served my country a little because I had a job in the military, but I didn't serve it that much. Well, how do you serve the country anyhow? I served the military, one of the most perfect socialist institutions that we have is the military. People say, these right wingers that love warfare and love the military, they don't seem to realize that the military is the most socialist thing going. And if you tell them the military is socialist, oh no, the military is not socialist. Yeah, right. Whatsoever a people believeth shall make it free, enslave it, or corrode its very marrow in strict accordance with the natural order. Consequently, if a people place implicit faith in what philosophers teach them, they are liable to be duped. And they're really duped today, I'll tell you that. If many nations are so duped, their deception is a menace to the liberty of the world. Yeah, they're duped and then they go to war against each other and kill off masses of people. Well, look at what Iran and Iraq did back in the, was it the early 90s? Maybe late 80s? They lost 1 million men on both sides because the CIA got in there, mostly. I mean, you know, what a crazy, crazy. Freemen should never regulate their conduct by the suggestions or dicta of others. Get that? That's why you're lone wolves. For when they do so, they are no longer free. You can't join a group, a big membership group. You're giving away your freedom of thought. I think everybody should have independent thought. That's why I don't run for dictator. That's why I don't form this big deal and be the leader. Because I don't want people following me. If they're going to be with me, I want them beside me, not following me. And I'm insulted by that whole idea. You're more powerful as an individual than you'll ever know. No man ought to obey any contract, written or implied, except he himself has given his personal and formal adherence thereto, when in a state of mental maturity and unrestrained liberty. It is only slaves that are born into contracts signed and sealed by their progenitors. Boy, I'll tell you, who around is not involved in a contract? The freeman is born free, lives free, dies free. Well, you can't die free, you can't live free if you're loaded down with debt. It's impossible. Debt is slavery. Get out of it. He is, even though living in an artificial civilization, above all laws, all constitutions, all theories of right and wrong. He supports and defends them, of course, as long as they suit his end. But if they don't, then he annihilates them by the easiest and most direct method. There is no obligation upon any man to passive obedience when his life, his liberty, and his property are threatened by footpad assassin and statesman. One of Columbus's lieutenants in the West Indies captured a Carib chief of means of subtle stratagem. The chief was invited to a feast, when there persuaded with honeyed words to don on horseback a set of brightly polished steel manacles. It being cunningly represented to him that the irons were the regalia of sovereignty. He foolishly believed his astute flatterer, and when the chains were firmly clasped around his limbs, he was led away to die in vermin, turning a mill in a Spanish dungeon. What those glittering manacles were to the Indian chieftain, constitution, laws, moral codes, and Hebrew-dominated civilizations are to the nations of the earth. Indeed, under the name of progress and social evolution, mankind has been lured into the fetid dungeons where it labors unceasingly for naught in darkness, despair, and shame. Like the Spanish lieutenant, the masters of the earth first flatter their dupes in order to more easily enchain them. You know how politicians talk to you? Oh, you're good people, all you good people out there. You know what's right, and I'll tell you what's right. You know, bullshit. Who talks nowadays of the sovereign people without a laugh of derision? And yet it was once thought to be a term of significance. Well, they talk about it all the time today. Sovereign people, sovereign shit. What group of people in this country are sovereign? Well, the rich, the very super rich, I guess they're sovereign, but they got to watch their back too against another sovereign. And yet it was once thought to be a full significance. Their sovereignty is now acknowledged a sham and their freedom a dream. The sovereign people be, it is clear therefore that man or nation that would retain liberty or be really safe must accept no formula as final, must trust in nothing written or unwritten, living or dead, must believe neither in special Jehovah's or weeping saviors, neither in raging devils or in devilish philosophies, neither in ghosts nor an idol, nor in laws, nor in women, nor in man. O threats of hell, the hopes of paradise, one thing at least is certain, this life flies. One thing is certain, and all the rest is lies. The flower that was once bloomed forever dies. He who say to himself, I must believe, I must not question, is not a man, but a mere presumptuous mental gilding. He who believes because it has been handed down is a menial in his heart, and he who believes because it has been written is a fool in his folly. Sagacious spirits doubt all things and hold fast only to that which is demonstrable true. Let's see here, where we at. The rules of life are not to be found in Korans, Bibles, Decalogues and constitutions, but rather the rules of decadence and death. The law of laws is not written in Hebrew consonants or upon tables of brass and stone, but in every man's own heart. He who obeys any standard of right and wrong, but the one set up by his own conscience, betrays himself into the hands of his enemies, who are ever laying in wait to bind him to their millstones. And generally, a man's most dangerous enemies are his neighbors. Masterful men laugh with contempt at spiritual thunders and have no occasion to dread the decisions of any human tribunal. They're above and beyond all that. Laws and regulations are only for conquered vassals. The free man does not require them. He may manufacture and post up Decalogue regulations to bind and control dependents with, but he does not himself bow down before those inventions of his own hands except as a lure. Statute books and golden rules were made to fettered slaves and fools. Very useful are they for controlling the herds of sentenced convicts who fill the factories and cultivate the fields. All moral principle, therefore, are the servitudes, not the masters of the strong. Power made moral codes and power abrogates them, which reminds me, and I'm going to tell this out of school, in most films I identify more with the criminal than the so-called good guy. Not all the time, but I tend to do that. I think that the bad guy is more practical, more reasonable, more logical. If he was a smart bad guy, you can go out there and tell all the right wing Metzger cheers for the bad guy in the movie. Many times I do. A man is under no obligation, you know, like Henry Fonda in Once Upon a Time in the West. He was so cool, unbelievably cool, and he Mother Nature would love him. A man is under no obligation to obey anything or anybody. It is only serving men must obey, because they are caitiffs by birth, breeding, and condition. Morals are only required in an immoral community, that is to say, a community held in a state of conquest. Fear God, bridle the spirit, obey the law is advice most excellent, as from a philosopher to a yokel. But when directed in all earnestness at a man of inherent might, he smiles to himself in silent scorn, like all these politicians in Washington. Do you believe that they believe in all this shit they put out? Do you really believe they believe that? Well, behind closed doors, they laughed their ass off. Some of them may be real fools, but there's a lot of them up there. They know exactly what they're doing. They went in there for one reason, that's to get rich. And they don't believe that bullshit that they're dishing out. Full well he knows that in actual life the path to victory and renown does not lie through Gethsemanes, but over fallen enemies, the ruins of vital rival combines. Through Alcaldonamus, meekness of spirit is regarded by him as a convenient superstition, very useful for the regulating the lives of his servants, his women and his children, but otherwise inoperative. You know, that's what gets me, these Christians. The unbelievable thing they'll keep mouthing, say, the meek shall inherit the earth. How could anybody believe that? How could anybody in their right mind believe that? The meek never inherit anything. And even what they have gets taken away. I rest my hopes on nothing, proclaimed Goethe, and masterful minds in all ages have never done like otherwise. This unspoken thought gives to all truly great men their manifest superiority over the brainless, vociferated herd. The common people have always had to be befooled with some written or wooden or golden idol, some constitution, declaration, or gospel. Consequently, the majority of them have ever been mental thralls, living and dying in an atmosphere of strong illusion. They are befooled and hypnotized even to this hour, and a large proportion of them must remain so until time is no more. Indeed, the masses of mankind are but the sediment from which all the other valuable elements have been long ago distilled. They are totally incapable of real freedom. And if it were granted to them, they would straightway vote themselves a master, or 1,000 masters, within 24 hours. Mastership is right. Mastership is natural. Mastership is eternal. But only those who cannot overthrow it and trample it beneath their feet. Is it not a fact that the actual life, the ballot box votes of 10 million of subjective personalities, are as thistle down when weighed against the far-seeing thought and material prowess of, say, 10 strong, silent men? Well, that's what I've said. That's what Bob Matthews said. That's what Frank Silva said. That it wouldn't take that many people that were really determined and really fanatical to get the job done in this country. It wouldn't. It takes people who know exactly what needs to be done, and they get it done. And they don't piss around with Mickey Mouse. It is notorious, universally so, that the blackest falsehoods are ever decked out in the most brilliant, gorgeous regalia. Clearly, therefore, it is the brave man's duty to regard all sacred things, all legal things, all constitutional things, all holy things with more than usual suspicion. I deny and I affirm is the countersign of material freedom. I believe and I obey is the shibboleth of the suffrage. Belief is a flunky, a feminine. Doubt is a creator, a master. He who denies fundamentals is in triple armor clad. indeed he is vulnerable, invulnerable. On the other hand, it's been said that every belief, every philosophy has some truth in it. But so, we might add, has every insanity. Strong men are not deterred from pursuing their aim by anything. They go straight to the goal. And that goal is beauty, wealth, and material power. The mission of power is to control and exploit the powerless. For to powerless is to be criminal. And the world would indeed be a house of horrors if all men were good and all women were padlocked. As far as human searchlights have been penetrated into the darkness and enshrouds the origin of the nations, we see the subduers and the subdued, the plebeians and the patricians, the chiefs and the governed, and the vassals who obey. And there is nothing in the most modern social developments of these deedless days to warrant any belief that this ancient and natural division of human animals into castes of superiors and inferiors, sovereigns and serfs, can ever be dispensed with. The slave owner's whip cracked from the beginning, and it will crack till the day of doom. In every kingdom, republic, and empire on earth, we have in one disguise or another the master and the slave, the ruler and the ruled. In the course of centuries, names alone have changed. Essentials have remained the same. Forms of royalty may alter, but the kings can never die. There was mastership at the beginning, and there will be mastership to the end. We build, but our fathers build. Change is not progress, nor numbers advance. Everyone who would be free must show his power. Unalterable remains the basis of all earthly greatness. He who exalteth himself shall be exalted, and he who humbleth himself shall be righteously trodden beneath the hoofs of the herd. The humble are only fit for dog's meat. Bravery includes every virtue, humility, and every crime. He who is afraid to risk his life must never be permitted to win anything. Human rights and wrongs are not determined by justice, but by might. Disguise it as you may, the naked sword is still kingmaker and kingbreaker as of yore. All other theories are lies and lures. Well, let's stop there and go to something else for a change. Let's go back to Terror in the Night, the Klan against the Jews. Of course, I believe, like I did about the Civil War, once they disbanded the armies, if the guerrilla forces would have fought on, they could have won. The South could have won. There's no doubt about that. The North would have gotten tired of the war after any much more of it. It was draining all their money and everything. So anyhow, down South, I think it could have been taken care of a lot easier by hardcore super secret people similar to Tommy Terrence and Kathy Ainsworth, but a lot more of those kind. Forget about the other kind. Yeah, the rest of the people were in the Klan, unless there's something they did I don't know about, can be forgotten about. But you got to develop a super guerrilla army of a type, first ideological and later militarily. So anyhow, luckily Schlager's wife, Betty Lee, whom he had met and married in Cincinnati in 54 after graduating from Hebrew Union College of the Jewish Institute of Religion, was a registered nurse. She carried him through long and painful convalescence. When Ackerman and Rosenbaum offered him the job, Schlager was eager to accept. He'd grown weary of New Hampshire winters, and warmer climate was appealing. Schlager's first years in Meridian, Mississippi, were generally quiet, but members of the congregation remember one episode that showed the rabbi was not quite as washed out and spiritless as his appearance might suggest. When the Meridian Star ran an editorial calling kosher food a ripoff for Jews to make money, Schlager went to the newspaper's office in downtown Meridian and stormed into the office of James Skews, the Star's eccentric publisher, and banged on Skews' desk. the rabbi declared that the K on the food packages stood for kosher and not the U for, and the U for Union Orthodox Rabbis. Food so marked was authentic kosher food, Schlager told the publisher, and any attempt to call it a ripoff was wrong-headed. Now, he failed to talk about how the rabbis go into the manufacturer and dictate to the manufacturer that they're going to get a break off, they're going to take money off the top for them to consider this food kosher. It's a racket. It's been proven over and over to be a racket, even certain groups going up against each other in New York City, Jews against Jews over the kosher racket. So what the guy that ran the paper should have done is grabbed him by the throat, grabbed him by the ass, and threw him out of the newspaper and said, "Kike, don't come back." Skews hastily apologized and wrote a correction that was immediately published in the Star. You see, truth is no defense, evidently. Schlager was pleased with his triumph, though he considered the correction to be more foolish than the original editorial. It wasn't foolish. It was exactly the truth. Kosher food is a racket. And the Jews work that racket all over the place. And whenever they say anything about it, if one came up to me and started bitching about the kosher food and the kosher food racket, I'd kick his ass. Skews, who usually bore a derby and by turns drove a Rolls Royce and an old Bentley convertible, had inherited the Meridian Star from his father and used the newspaper of his father had to promote conservative causes and defend segregation. Well, he didn't defend it hard enough. He helped found Lamar Academy, a white citizens' council school established as part of the statewide network of private schools set up to evade federal mandated desegregation of the public schools. A nervous man with a stutter, Skews took almost no part in the Meridian social life. Well, these guys, you know, the White Citizens Council and all that kind, we got the, I forget what they got going now, it's an offspring of that. A bunch of conservative white guys down south, and they rant and rave and pound their chest. But they'll always give in to power and pressure. They'll never stand up and fight, at least like the White Knights of Mississippi. These people are worthless. They're worse than worthless. They lead a lot of good people off into the swamp. And you could tell them I said so. I forget what they call that outfit. It's still the same old White Citizens Council as far as I'm concerned. While he generally left direction of the editorial side of the paper to others, under his ownership, the Star flew the Southern Way of Life banner and ran scathing editorials blasting the federal government for trying to promote desegregation. Yeah, but when push come to shove, you bent your knee to bail. The news columns routinely carried stories supporting white supremacy and published articles about Klan and National States Rights Party as though they were ordinary civic organizations. Well, they were, to the people who understood their culture. When President Johnson dispatched J. Edgar Hoover to Mississippi to open the FBI's new Jackson field office, the Meridian Star editorial said that Hoover's real mission was to add to the to-do government is making out of the disappearance of the three civil rights workers. And that the big Philadelphia show goes on and on. The student volunteers, the beatniks, the wild-eyed left-wing nuts, the unshaven and unwashed go on meddling and muddling. The poison pen sweeping of the gutters of journalism go on to printing their lying trash. Well, the federal government got away with it. Can you name me anybody in the federal government who was killed by the Ku Klux Klan? Or any whites pro-segregationist? You know any government official or officer that was killed during this period? I don't believe anyone was. The newspaper Rabbi Schlager thought belonged to the top of any list of things that held the city back and suppressed new ideas. Well, this is the way the conservatives have always fought. they're always fighting, riding their bicycle backwards. They're always giving up something. You know, the enemy said, come, let's negotiate. And they always negotiate something away until there's nothing left. And it's even worse in this country because what used to be a pretty reasonable conservative movement now is totally gone. And they've taken the name, like many times these Jew manufacturers do, and put the old name of trusted, say, electronics equipment and so forth, and TVs, old tried and true good company names that have gone out of business or bankrupt, and they put it on new trash made in some corner of China or who knows where. And the people say, oh my goodness, there's a Capehart. Oh, there's Stromberg Carlson. There's, you know, all the great old names, Philco and all that, and it's nothing but bullshit. At the beginning of April 68, J.B. Stoner visited Meridian to conduct rallies of his National States Rights Party. Local Jews paid little attention. Yep, boy, I'll tell you, they should pay attention, because there was no bigger Jew hater that I've ever met than J.B. Stoner. The FBI, aware of NSRP's links to the White Knights and to incidents of racial and anti-Jew violence in the 50s and early 60s, carefully monitored their activities. And unfortunately, they probably weren't being monitored in reverse. If you're being monitored, you have to monitor. You always have to do that. If you're being watched and informed on and infiltrated, you've got to do the same thing. As it happened, the Bureau's offices in Meridian Post Office Building overlooked Bill Gordon's barbershop across the street, a notorious gathering place for the Klan. On the evening of April 4th, Jack Rucker and Frank Watts and several other FBI agents turned off their office lights to observe an organizational meeting Stoner was conducting in the barbershop. All of a sudden, as they looked out the window at Stoner standing under a huge banner emblazoned with the NSRP Thunderbolt, word came about over the FBI's office radio that Dr. Martin Luther King had been assassinated in Memphis. I'll bet J.B. did a jig on that. Damn, Rucker exclaimed, J.B. Stoner's got an alibi. If he wasn't down there right now, he'd be tops on our list of suspects. Stoner, a short, pudgy lawyer who walked with a limp as a result of childhood polio, had delivered bitter diatribes against King. I've heard some of them in person. Word of King's death quickly reached Gordon's barbershop. Stoner and several Klansmen erupted into whoops of joy. He's been a good nigger since he got shot, chortled Stoner, who later would represent James Earl Ray, King's assassin. Joining in the laughter at the barbershop were several Klansmen, including Raymond Roberts. And upon hearing the news at his mountain hideaway, Terrence danced for joy. While Stoner's anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish activities had caused relatively little concern among Meridian's Jews, he was subject of a bulging dossier at the ADL headquarters in New York. Yeah, right, yeah. I told you we had infiltrators into that office. At least one used to bring me some juicy files. He had been a Ku Klux Klan organizer as a teenager, formed the Stoner Anti-Jewish Party at the age of 23, wrote and distributed a pamphlet declaring the satanic Jews must be put to death, and for more than two decades had been one of the nation's most notorious hate mongers. Depends on how you look at him. Lawman tried repeatedly without success to set up Stoner to the 63 Birmingham church bombing that killed four black children. Not until 1980, when he was brought to trial in Alabama and convicted in 58 bombing of another black church in Birmingham, did Stoner finally go to prison. At his trial, where he was sentenced to 10 years, John Young, the prosecutor, characterized him as a professional hater. Well, that's a compliment. A cold-blooded bomber and bull-faced liar. He couldn't possibly lie as much as you bastards in the legal business. Rabbi Schlager's reaction was an exception to the indifference of which Meridian Jews met Stoner's visit. He saw Stoner's appearance as part of a larger pattern of growing intolerance. Woo! Just like we see on our website, tolerance is suicide. He urged the congregation to organize for its own protection and to install a security system for the synagogue. In late May 68, Binder was invited to speak at a Meridian B'nai B'rith meeting. Now, remember, the B'nai B'rith is the heart of the Jewish conspiracy, not the ADL. All the ADL is an investigative arm of B'nai B'rith. Always keep your eye on B'nai B'rith. It's the Masonic Jewish, that's the heart of the situation. And whenever you find B'nai B'rith meetings in your neck of the woods, check them out or even infiltrate them. Listen to your rabbi. Take him seriously. He knows what he's talking about. I know from my experience in Jackson. Meridian Jews tried to shrug it off, badgered by the rabbi. The temple's board of trustees finally agreed to discuss hiring a guard, but ultimately decided against even that precaution. Schlager was left to find what reassurance he could in a pledge from the chief of the police. "We won't let the bastards bother you," Roy Gunn said. "We won't put up with Klan violence." You see, the reason the Jews don't get too excited is they always depend on Christian sources and government sources and everybody else to protect them. And, of course, sometimes that's their downfall because they don't... At least they had the JDL, which it's logical. They hate JDL. I never disagreed with their logic. I mean, you know, in Germany, if every time SS went out to pick up Jews, somebody met them at the door with a gun, things would have been quite a bit different, at least for a while. In a Knight Rider attack late on the night of May 2nd, a machine gun was fired into the home of Flossie Lindsay, a black woman active in the NAACP who had been employed by a Head Start program in the Sand Hill community in rural Rankin County, just northeast of Jackson. Mrs. Lindsay's 6-year-old niece, Betty Jean McLean, was wounded in the leg by a bullet. Now, here's where I say that... You can't ever get anywhere this way. You can't get anywhere this way because even your own people, your own white people that would in many cases support you and give you sustenance, won't hang in for that kind of stuff. And also tactically it doesn't change anything other than make it worse for you. Terrence commuting in Denny Joe Hawkins' dark green Buick back and forth to the area from his mountain hideout had struck once more. On May 26, 68, a Sunday, several area churches observed a restoration day to raise funds for the rebuilding of 6 black churches that had burned in Lauderdale County in the preceding months. The appeal had been organized by the Committee of Conscience. Well, I wouldn't cry at the dismemberment of churches because they spend all their waking time, whether black or white, brainwashing white people to accept everything that the Jews and others want to foist upon us. So if a church burns down, I don't cry a bit. However, it's not necessarily a tactic that reaps you much reward. In the middle of a war like between the states, when churches were definitely used for as staging areas, and of course even now in the desegregation too, the churches were used for political meetings. Once they turn into political meetings, then I'm saying that they're looking for trouble. But anyhow, in churches in general, turn them into museums. 2 evenings later, I would not outlaw religion. Even Lenin did not believe in that. He believed in taxing them, and we should just let loose with all the tax exemption. Just quit giving them tax exemption, and the problem will be solved. Because I would say 4/5 of people involved in religion, running religion, are in it for the money. And so if you took that away, there wouldn't be many left. 2 evenings later, Rabbi Schlager and his wife got home late from visiting a young couple who had become engaged. The 3 Schlager children, Lenny, 11, Elena, 6, David, 4, as well as Mrs. Schlager's mother, Ida Barron, who was living with the Schlagers, were all asleep. The rabbi and his wife were preparing to go to bed themselves when about 12:15 a.m. a thunderous explosion in the distance shook the china in their kitchen closet. The synagogue was 3 miles from Schlager's house, but from that moment he heard the sound. There was never any question in his mind that it was the temple. "I knew it. I knew it. They've blown up the synagogue," he cried. Well, that's it for today. We'll be back with you tomorrow on Wotan's Day. Wotan's Day.
Something happening here, what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Being wrong, nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. A field day for the heat, 1,000 people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Into your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. You better stop now.